I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here 9 to 11 weekdays, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Today's Veterans Day. For Veterans Day and Memorial Day, the Mike Madison message is not only just thank you for your service, but I plead with people to stop the warmongers and the war profiteers from sending our volunteer service members around the world to secure these small sliver of human beings' power and profit around there. I believe that we talk about our veterans and thank them for protecting us. We have a responsibility as well to protect them. It's coming from your one relentless anti-war host here in Central Mississippi. And I just think these points should be made. Great to be a veteran, great to serve in the armed forces. Horrible to be directed by some of the people that we have allowed to send our men and women off to fight and die half a world away. Next hour, I'll have somebody from Americans for Prosperity. I haven't gotten my morning text. I'm expecting Stephen Utroska. I believe he's still in town. I know they've got an event up in North Mississippi today for Veterans Day with some of the guys from the Freedom Caucus from the Mississippi Legislature. I've briefly met some of these guys, but they seem to be kind of the nexus of freedom in Mississippi, so I would like to get to know them more. I'm hoping to head up there this afternoon for this Veterans Day thing, but expecting Stephen Utroska or some representative from Americans for Prosperity. I tell you, they better send somebody in because I have not prepared a second hour of material. So I've got my quotes of the day. I'm going to throw this one in there, although it'll probably make an appearance next Wednesday during Hump Day Health. This is from a Dr. Stanley Monteith. He says, aspartame is a chemical made of aspartic acid and phenylalanine. It breaks down into formaldehyde, eventually into wood alcohol. It produces all sorts of problems, mental problems, and it impacts on literally every organ in the body. They know this. There are extensive animal studies that show this, and it never should have been put into our food. And when he talks about aspartame, he's talking about these artificial sweeteners in the diet sodas. I ran across the quote this morning. I can't let it just sit idle. Maybe I catch somebody who doesn't listen to my health show who's currently sipping on a diet soda on the way to work. I'm just letting you know, you're not doing yourself any favors. On to a more traditional quote of the day, and then into another statistic from our friends over at CNS News. This is Lysander Spooner. He said, if any man's money can be taken by a so-called government without his own personal consent, all his other rights are taken with it. For with this money, the government can and will hire soldiers to stand over him, compel him to submit to its arbitrary will, and kill him if he resists. Kind of think about what's going on with the January 6th situation. We just got a guy sentenced to 41 months for the January 6th protests. And that is because his tax dollars were used to hire a bureaucracy and an armed force to protect these politicians who stripped him of his wealth, and then they used that money they took from him to prosecute him, and now they'll use that money that he paid into the federal government to house him in a cage for almost 4 years. Something to consider. That also leads into, and it talks about stripping people of their money, a constant refrain of the show, the federal government, according to a monthly Treasury statement, collected a record $283,927,000,000 in total taxes in October, which was the first month of fiscal year 2022. federal spending. Now, again, let me say the first number again. They collected a record amount. They took a record amount of dollars out of the economy and put it into the clutches of the federal government. $288,927,000,000 was stripped out of the productive economy, sent up to the government, yet federal spending hit $448,983,000,000 in October. It's the second highest ever for the first month of the fiscal year, the first being last October, when they were really turning on the printing machines to get everybody their stimmies and the rest of the ridiculousness around their so-called COVID response. So they took in a record amount of $283 billion, yet the people in Washington, D.C. have spent $448 billion. What's that, about $164 billion deficit after collecting record amounts of taxes just in October alone. That moves us onto our stack of headlines here. Inflation turns political nightmare for president. Oh, what a shame. We're so sorry he's suffering. Our condolences are with Joe Biden at this very difficult time. As people scramble to try to get cranberry sauce for their Thanksgiving. But I will say this. I may talk about this next hour with AFP because it is just driving me insane, this idea that all of the inflationary stuff is placed on Joe Biden. I know I talk about it a lot, but for the love of God, you don't vote your way between these two political parties. You don't vote your way out of this inflation. It is created by both parties for decades and decades and decades. We would have had this inflation if Donald Trump had been reelected. We would still have seen this inflation. I think it was last year they inflated the money supply. I think 40% of all money ever created was created in Donald Trump's last year. I don't know how to do an hour or 2 hours of an economics lesson. I don't know. I don't know how to do that, make it entertaining and make it something that anybody would listen to. But for the love of God, can we start understanding economics? Other headlines here, Americans rush to discount stores. All wage gains taken away. All you people out there that have been fighting for 15, you know, this left-wing livable wage, fight for 15, meaning they're fighting for $15 an hour. Well, I tell you what, you're probably there now. I know many small businesses and even larger chains that to attract employees have gotten their pay up from, in a lot of cases, minimum wage or $8 or $9 an hour. They've gone up to $12 to $15 an hour. You've got your $15. You fought for it. You got it. And guess what? You're getting nothing for it because as particularly libertarians, people who understand economics, have tried to explain to you that raising pay rates for entry-level employees just arbitrarily, not based on the value of what they bring to a business, but just setting an arbitrary so-called, air quotes here in the studio, livable wage, just creates the inflation that takes the cost of things right back out of the grasp of people making $15 an hour. So there have been all of these pay raises across the spectrum, particularly at the lower levels of employment, and you've actually lost ground. It costs so much more to buy food and fuel and housing and rent and everything else that you've accomplished absolutely nothing. Now they will fight for 30. Then they'll be fighting for 100. We're on the path of Zimbabwe at this point. You're going to be fighting for $100 an hour just to keep up. Just to keep up. You're not making any progress, as I say. We tried to tell you. Nobody listened. Yeah, that leads me to the next headline that was in this stack. All wage gains taken away. I'm sorry, but it's very difficult to watch these things, know how they're going to play out. We knew. Listen to Peter Schiff, economists who are on the free market side of things. They've been just telling you this money creation will create inflation, and it pops up, and everybody just looks at Joe Biden like this mentally addled, corrupt piece of filth could possibly move prices in the United States. Now, there may be something to a little bit of the energy. I understand shutting down pipelines, but look, inflation is all around the world right now just because central banks print money. Trust me, even if ExxonMobil was drilling more in the United States, if countries around the world are paying more for oil, they will ship it elsewhere. There's no patriotism in the oil companies here. During Donald Trump, we were still importing 6 or 7 or 8 million barrels a day. The idea of true energy independence has never been accomplished. But it's so hard to listen day in and day out to everybody just so misdiagnosing this problem and thinking that you just got to vote in 2022. This inflation, it's just going to go away. No, it's not. No, it's not. You can't vote your way out of this. You could demand from your representatives here in Mississippi, which are largely Republicans, that they curtail all of this spending and money printing and decertify the Fed. Okay, I'm not going to get started on the Federal Reserve again today, probably. Next headline, homeless shelter opens on Billionaire's Row. So that says it all right there. That should have been the only headline I had. Billionaires looking out of their mansions at the homeless in the streets, stepping over them on the way to the, well, their servants stepping over them on the way to the mailbox. And electricity costs surge. Maine, the state of Maine, facing down a 60% hike. 60% hike in electrical rates. Unbelievable. This is while Main Street continues to struggle. And this is also, you know, large corporations too with the entry-level stuff. But this was kind of interesting. As somebody who's employed a lot of entry-level workers, I can't really wrap my head around whether this is a positive for a business or not. But they're pulling out all the stops to try to get workers, and they're struggling to attract workers as the coronavirus pandemic drags on. No, that's absolutely not true. There is no pandemic. What it should say is struggling to attract workers as the coronavirus pandemic response drags on. Major companies are dangling an uncommon benefit to lure job candidates, a chance to get paid every day. Dozens of employers, including fast food chains, Arby's, Wendy's, Jimmy John's, and Taco Bell, as well as retailers Big Lots, Dollar Tree, and Kroger, are now giving employees the option to withdraw money from their paychecks moments after finishing their shift by using smartphone apps like Branch or Daily Pay. You talk about living paycheck to paycheck. Now we're living hour to hour. I can't decide as an employer. You know, one of the ways you get your employees to show back up the next day is the idea that they've got a paycheck at the end of that rainbow. Anybody who has employed a lot of entry-level employees, one of your worst times of the year is the beginning of the year when income tax refund checks start coming. A lot of people get those big fat checks because they've overpaid or they're entitled to earned income tax credit. As soon as they get that check for $1,800, $3,200, if they've got a bunch of kids, boom, they're gone. That's their vacation fund. They take about 2 months off of work than everybody used to in the old economy. They used to come scrambling back to work in usually around May. The stimmy, the refund checks, the earned income tax credit goes away. But employers always dread that time. I know car dealers love it. Employers hate it. But now you pay them every day. There's no skin in the game left to stay there to try to get that check. It's even worse, though, now with automatic pay. I used to love having that paper check, knowing that somebody had to show up and take it out of my hand. You have somebody who no shows on you a shift, just quits arbitrarily in the middle of a shift in a huff because they're a snowflake. And this has been going on for decades, back when I was in the restaurant business a long time ago. Always knowing that they had to come back. They had to come back and look at you in the face and say, "Hey, Mike, you have a check for me?" That was at least a little uncomfortable for somebody who would quit in a huff. I got to tell you, getting paid every single day may actually make the situation worse, but maybe these people know better than me. We'll see. Come back. I've got an image of the day. I've done my quotes of the day. I've got an image of the day. Possibly the worst thing to do on over-the-air radio possible with no no ability to do a video stream. But I'm going to explain an image of the day, and then you can email me if you want to see it. It's quite stark. Stark enough that I'm going to take the leap to try to explain it and describe it to you on the air. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with me. I am not what you would call a classically trained broadcaster in any way, shape, or form. I was a guy who thought different about some things and thought I'd give it a shot. So I don't probably understand the rules. I've got a chart here I want to try to explain on air. And if you want to email me, it's MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I'm fully aware some of these things I find fascinating, other people just yawn at. I understand that. That's okay. I only take two of the 24 hours a day. There's a chart of Iceland when it comes to vaccinations and illness. And it is just startling. It compares the number of Icelanders, and I believe they are around 88% inoculations. It ramped up pretty darn quick starting in, I guess, the beginning of this year. Excuse me. Yeah, really December. I guess it looks like they rolled out the shots on Christmas. What a great gift. And then by by April, they were pretty well fully vaccinated. Had a little spike in April in coronavirus cases. Then in July, this is after about 88% of the population had taken the jab. These dates, the line is so stark, it's just parabolic straight up. It's almost like Iceland put out a memo. Okay, everybody get sick now. And this is, again, an 88% inoculation in Iceland, and they just go completely parabolic. On this chart, they come back down a little bit. A pretty substantial amount through September. And then it looks like around October 10th, they put the call out again. Okay, everybody get sick again now. And it's just, this chart just goes straight up. Straight up. And I would imagine I have not followed the boosters. I believe Iceland is on the Pfizer product. The failed Pfizer product. We're not supposed to talk about that. I saw a chart the government has put out. I think the Surgeon General has put out about spotting misinformation. They make it out like it's a fun little game. They give you all these things. You know, they really are targeting things like memes, and I would imagine they'd target the show as well. Have you seen the movie or the series that is on Hulu right now called Dope Sick? I'd heard some good things about it. Michael Keaton is the star of this as a doctor. It's all about the opioid epidemic. It's a it's a drama kind of documenting the Sackler family, whose company was basically at the verge of bankruptcy, of going under, before they discovered these wonder drugs, opioids. And they put out OxyContin. And so it takes you through that. I'm only about a 1.5 episodes into it. The funniest thing, though, was this thing is, it is not kind to the Sackler family or to the medical establishment that started doling out these opioids, but it's also very telling. I encourage people to watch it because it's a lot about the relationship between a pharmaceutical representative and a doctor. And a pharma rep goes in, and it looks like, as I said, I'm only about an episode and a half in, it looks like this pharmaceutical rep's getting a bit of a conscience on this stuff, kind of wondering exactly what he is involved in. But it's this doctor who doesn't know any better. The pharmaceutical rep comes in and starts spewing out the lies that his employer told him, and he starts getting people hooked on OxyContin. But it's really fascinating. As I said, it's not kind to the Sackler family or Purdue Pharma. But one of the first breaks in the first episode we had was a vaccine commercial for here in Mississippi. It's one of these... My wife got COVID. She was in the hospital for 82 days. Please rush out and get your shot. I just found it wildly funny as in the smack dab in the middle of a show, just showing you how dishonest and disastrous and damaging these pharmaceutical companies are. You've got a commercial basically saying, trust us. It's going to be great. No knock on the old couple who was The woman went down supposedly with COVID and was in the hospital for 82 days. It's a sad story. The husband kind of tears up a little bit during it. Nothing against them. But it was just kind of interesting, the ad placement of that ad in the middle of just showing you the true nature of the pharmaceutical industry. I don't know how many people ran into that ad during this thing and saw it the same way I did, but it gave me a chuckle. I actually laughed out loud all by myself like an insane person. Gavin Newsom has resurfaced. He was at a wedding, I believe, this past weekend. The rumor was that Gavin Newsom had gotten Guillain-Barre syndrome or Bell's palsy. He had had a bad reaction. I believe it has been now confirmed that he did have a reaction. Apparently, he got his booster shot. I think he's taken the whole cocktail, if I'm correct. He's kind of mixed and matched. What a pioneer. And apparently, what they're reporting is that he got a booster shot. I'm not sure which one he got as far as his third shot. And then he took a flu shot a couple of days later, and he had fatigue and muscle weakness. Now, I would just assume that whatever is being put out by Gavin Newsom is misleading at best. But apparently, he's resurfaced, was standing upright. And this is why I do not report on rumors as fact, even though it might bolster a point. You know, I'm constantly on air warning about these experimental therapies, this mass experimentation on humankind. But I don't jump on that stuff because I don't want to have egg on my face, and I don't ever want to exaggerate. Now, we'll see if he has any long-term health effects. Short-term health effects can be a sign of long-term damage. But I do not jump on these stories for exactly that reason, because you will find, as I said the other day, Hillary was not in Guantanamo. Hillary was not under house arrest. Hillary was not executed, but I kept hearing this. This was one of the big problems I saw with the Q movement, was that every rumor that was circulated that fit the narrative of Trump fighting the deep state suddenly went viral, and it was a fact to everybody. And again and again and again, it was wrong, wronger, and wrongest. And so I caution people from readily accepting those things. I'll always attempt to even fact-check myself. There is a concerning headline that has come out that's kind of a theme of this week that we'll get to when we come back. Pro athletics here in the United States. I have, since the day I heard that the Atlanta Falcons were mandating the vaccine for everybody on their team, I've said this is something to watch. I've been wondering if these NFL team owners were smart enough to give their players saline just to be part of the propaganda but not actually part of the experiment. But it's possible that they weren't that smart. Got a story on one of these football players when I come back. Stay with me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. Stephen Utroska has confirmed he will be with us next hour for our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity. So we've got the head cheese coming in to discuss what's going on here in Mississippi, the events that they'll be holding. If you want to get involved in trying to free our state, protect our state from federal overreach, these kinds of things, you need to get in the game. And Americans for Prosperity is a great, great tool to use to do it. One thing I wanted to mention about the Dope Sick series as well, one of the things that came out in it was that one of the reasons that OxyContin got a big foothold as a pain medication in the United States was because the FDA granted a first time ever insert or qualification for the drug, saying that it was non-addictive. A lot of pain medications were known to have been addictive at the time, and the FDA granted this special kind of qualification for this thing that when you hear the doctors on this show, and it is fictionalized, but it's based on what actually happened as the opioid epidemic got cranked up here in the United States late 90s, early 2000s, and really went to town for about 20 years, the FDA guy that was in charge of the group to grant this special treatment, I'm searching for the word, this kind of this special approval of this one particular drug, the guy at the FDA that did that as the as the Justice Department started to investigate, they couldn't locate this guy at the FDA anymore because he had gone to go work for anyone? Purdue Pharmaceuticals. It was like their head of government affairs or something. So he grants Purdue Pharmaceuticals from the FDA, you know, this gold standard that they keep telling us about, this gold standard of approval. So the guy for the FDA, and I assure you, he either knew that he was feathering his own nest through a direct implication from Purdue, or he suspected that if he does Purdue this big favor, he will probably parachute out of the FDA. Again, you know, you're at the FDA, outside of someone like Anthony Fauci, who's actually at the National Institutes of Health, and he is the highest paid federal employee. If anything should make people want to do a tax revolt in this country, it should be the fact that Anthony Fauci is our highest paid federal employee using tax dollars. But I guarantee you this guy knew that by doing a big favor for a pharmaceutical company and granting them what ended up being billions and billions of dollars in profits, that he would end up benefiting himself personally. This is what the FDA does. It's called the revolving door. And so this series, Dope Sick, I think is a great way to look at, the relationship between pharmaceutical salespeople and medical professionals. And I'll never forget a CNBC interview I saw with a doctor. And somebody was asking him about something. It might have been something about one of the drugs that was pulled off the market. Anyway, this doctor just came out and said, "Look, I'm busy. I've got tons of patients here. I see 160 people a day. I don't have time to read the research. That's what my pharmaceutical sales reps are for." This was a mainstream U.S. doctor, I'm sure held in high esteem for his lab coat and stethoscope, was just admitting that, no, salespeople tell me what I should prescribe to my patients. I don't have time to actually read the research, and I remember that being a big light bulb moment for me. Dope Sick does a good job of explaining this. So professional athletics, I've been talking a lot. As I say, it's kind of the theme of this week. I've gone through a laundry list, a long list. Took me two segments to go through, not even all the names, of a lot of European, American, maybe even Australian, Peruvian, there are all kinds of athletes around the world that are suddenly falling over on sports fields. This story appeared, and this is actually on the NFL website, more concerns over COVID-19. Have struck the Minnesota Vikings this week, including a vaccinated player who was admitted to an emergency room Tuesday night. Quote, "One of our players that was vaccinated, he had to go to the ER last night because of COVID. It's serious stuff." This is Coach Mike Zimmer told reporters on Wednesday. Quote, "Like 29 guys are getting tested because of close contact, including myself." Zimmer declined to name the hospitalized player, but said he is in stable condition. And so this is one of their, what do they say, an offensive lineman that has had to go to the emergency room, they say, because of COVID. Now, he's fully vaccinated, so there's all kinds of questions that should be asked around here. I went through the story. I didn't hear a lot of in-depth questions. Should a reporter say, "Well, that's odd, because we've been told that these vaccinated players don't succumb to COVID. Certainly don't go to emergency rooms." So is this guy suffering from COVID or is he suffering from the jab itself? But again, we're going to keep our eye on athletics for sure. I've had this one in my holster for several days now. Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, we've talked about a lot. He is actually bringing people together for large press conferences. And sadly, they get larger each time he does one of these things. He started out with 5 people. He's up to about 15 people on in a press conference where he's getting them to explain what has happened to them post-vaccination. But I wanted to play this doctor. I'll have to read his name off of his placard. He explains some common misconceptions. You know, he challenges this. Here's what we know. This is what the health authorities will tell you. Well, we know this. This is a certainty. That's how they always come at these things. And he's going to challenge a couple of those things in this press conference with Ron Johnson. I didn't cue that up particularly well. I promise you, the whole thing isn't just people whispering.
Thank you, Senator, for hosting all of us. Hello, I'm Peter Doshi. For identification purposes, I'm on the faculty at the University of Maryland and editor at the BMJ. I have no relevant conflicts of interest, and my comments today are my own. In pharmacy school, I teach a required course on how to critically appraise the medical literature. We train students on how to go beyond a study abstract and start to pick apart and critically assess biomedical studies, not just take them at face value. I want to use my 5 minutes here to harness that spirit of critical thinking. I'm saddened that we are supersaturated as a society right now in the attitude of everybody knows that has shut down intellectual curiosity and led to self-censorship. So let me start with a few everybody knows examples that I'm not sure we should be so certain about. Everybody knows that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. But if hospitalizations and deaths were almost exclusively occurring in the unvaccinated, why would booster shots be necessary?
What a great question.
Or why would the statistics be so different in the UK, where most COVID hospitalizations and deaths are among the fully vaccinated, as Senator Johnson said? There's a disconnect there. There's something to be curious about. There's something not adding up, and we should all be asking, is it true that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated? What does that even mean? Next slide, please. Then there's this. Everybody knows that COVID vaccines save lives. In fact, we've known this from early 2021. The clinical trials proved that to be the case, as you can see here in the quote of a February article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. But is it true? When that statement by prominent public health officials was penned, there had been just one death across the 70,000 Pfizer and Moderna trial participants. Today we have more data, and you can see that there were similar numbers of deaths in the vaccine and placebo groups. The trials did not show a reduction in death.
I mean, just think about that for a second. They came out, trial on 70,000 people with these shots, presumably about half getting inoculated, about half in the placebo group getting a saline shot. They had one death in the unvaccinated group. Out of 70,000, or let's just say 35,000 in the control group, of which I am a proud standing member, they had one death, and they used that death to say, look, nobody's died in the vaccinated side, but they have died in the unvaccinated side. One death. And this quote that he read is from Walensky and Fauci, are both quoted in this piece in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. Shame on you, the American Medical Association.
Even for COVID deaths, as opposed to other causes, the evidence is flimsy, with just two deaths in the placebo group versus one in the vaccine group. My point is not that I know the truth about what the vaccine can and cannot do. My point is that those who claimed the trials showed the vaccines were highly effective in saving lives were wrong. The trials did not demonstrate this. Next slide, please. Now let's talk about anti-vaxxers. Everybody knows you should discount what anti-vaxxers have to say. But what does the term mean? The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines it as, quote, a person who opposes the use of vaccines or regulations mandating vaccination.
Ugh.
The first part of the definition, I expected. The second part stunned me. There are entire countries from the United Kingdom to Japan which do not mandate childhood vaccines. Both achieve high levels of vaccination, just not through regulations mandating vaccines.
You know, I covered that story several weeks ago. I was actually pretty surprised at the vast majority. Again, we were number 34 on the World Health Index, and we were one of the few in that top 34 that mandated childhood vaccines. You don't hear in all of these other countries that have better health outcomes than the United States, you don't hear of kids dropping dead in school from measles and mumps and rubella. You don't hear any of those things. These kids lead long, healthy, productive lives just like we do. Some parents choose to vaccinate, some don't. Vaccinated kids co-mingle with unvaccinated kids in schools across the world without any incident. And yet here we are told, particularly here in Mississippi, that if you don't get your 72 shots, then you can't sit next to my little Johnny in school because you'll kill them all. Now, we're one of the few countries that mandate these things. And again, I encourage you to go watch Dope Sick and see the relationship between places like the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies to understand that. It's not about your health, never has been. It's about money. And these other countries just have not been bought and sold by the pharmaceutical companies, so they leave it up to parental choice.
There are no mandates there, and I would wager that a large minority, perhaps a majority, of the world's population meets the definition here of an anti-vaxxer. Another definition worth checking is vaccine. Next slide, please. I am one of the academics that argues that these mRNA products, which everybody calls vaccines, are qualitatively different than standard vaccines. And so I found it fascinating to learn that Merriam-Webster changed its definition of vaccine early this year.
This is when this stuff starts to get really creepy. I mean, the coordination between the government, the pharmaceutical industry, and academia, the coordination of that stuff all the way down to Merriam-Webster. I mean, Snopes was bad enough for years and years that they were basically a propaganda tool run by probably intelligence agencies to shoot down so-called conspiracy theories. But you've got Merriam-Webster, you've got the FDA, the CDC, the WHO changing definitions on their websites as the facts emerge and things become inconvenient to them.
mRNA products did not meet the definition of vaccine that has been in place for 15 years at Merriam-Webster, but the definition was expanded such that mRNA products are now vaccines. I highlight this to ask a question. How would you feel about mandating COVID vaccines if we didn't call them vaccines? What if these injections were called drugs instead? So here's the scenario. We have this drug, and we have evidence that it doesn't prevent infection, nor does it stop viral transmission. But the drug is understood to reduce your risk of becoming very sick and dying of COVID. Would you take a dose of this drug every 6 months or so for possibly the rest of your life, if that's what it took for the drug to stay effective? Would you not just take this drug yourself, but support regulations mandating that everybody else around you take this drug? Or would you say, hold on a sec. Maybe you'd say that if that's all the drug does, why not use a normal medicine instead? The kind we take when we're sick and want to get better. And why would you mandate it? The point is, just because we call it a vaccine doesn't mean we should assume these new products are just like all other childhood vaccines which get mandated. Each product is a different product. And if people are okay with mandating something simply because it's a vaccine and we mandate other vaccines, so why shouldn't we mandate this? I think it's time to inject some critical thinking into that conversation, and that is what I hope we're doing today. Thank you.
I'll tell you what, he's hit a lot of points that this show right here has hit a long period of time now. That definition of vaccine was changed January 16th, beginning of this year, about a month into this inoculation, this grand experiment, where I guess enough people were saying, hey, wait a second. The shot you're giving us does not conform to the definition of a vaccine. They said, well, we'll fix that. They called Merriam-Webster, and I'm sure anybody else who has online references that people might actually go to, and they just made sure that they made that change to fit this one particular product. That's some pretty amazing coordination. You got to hand it to
them. I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so
all right, only got a couple minutes left in this hour. Stephen Yatroska from Americans for Prosperity is already in the studio. Stephen, how are you?
Good. Always glad to be here.
Good. I appreciate you making the time for us. I know you're heading up to North Mississippi to do your event tonight for Veterans Day.
That's right. Got a big event. Nesbitt, which is just a small town in DeSoto County.
Check another one off my bucket list.
Yep.
Going to Nesbitt, Mississippi.
Going up to the gin. Yep. So yeah, that's at 6 o'clock. Everybody's invited. We do ask that you pre-register because there is limited seating, and we're getting pretty close to capacity now.
That's great.
I think as of last night, we had about 20 seats left.
So. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's getting
that's what you
close.
Like to see, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we expect some, you know, probably will show up without registering. So it's getting slim there. So
crashers.
If you're interested in wanting to come up, you know, please pre-register. You can go on our Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi, and see the event there. And there's a registration link on the event. But one thing I want to say quick, I heard you say earlier talking about people are all rushing out to the discount stores now. They've got to shop at the discount stores. Well, if you shop at Dollar Tree, know that they're going up on their prices for the first time in 40 years.
Is it $1.50 now? But
yeah, well, not all of their items, but a large selection of their items are now going up 50% to $1.50.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Talk about inflation.
Well, I do want to talk about inflation on the other side of this because I think you and I probably come from the same thing. I think it's being so misdiagnosed in the United States. People don't understand and they need to wrap their heads around this. It's time for an economics lesson.
Yeah, I'd be glad to give it.
Okay. All right, great. We're talking to Stephen Utrosko, Americans for Prosperity. He'll be with us next hour for the Freedom and Prosperity Hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Thursday, 10 to 11 o'clock is our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Stephen Utrosko from Americans for Prosperity. So let's get this out of the way. The inflation, what was the statistic from last year? It was like 40% of all the money created happened like last year.
I think it was 20%. 20% of all dollars were printed last year.
Of all time. I mean, of all
of
our history.
Every piece of currency we have floating around that has the U.S. names on it was printed last year, 20%.
And since 2008, the Fed has been constantly printing money, putting $160 billion into the bond market of freshly minted. You know, and when you talk about currency now, obviously we're not talking about a physical dollar that you can hold and fold, but just computer entries onto a keyboard that just puts money out into the economy. I mean, the inflation we're seeing right now was coming. I mean, it's been coming. Did Jimmy Carter have anything to do? Was there anything that you could lay at the feet of Jimmy Carter that caused the inflation of the 1970s? I really kind of meant to do some research on this. Was there anything that he did? Because he certainly took the blame for it. And you know, I'm no Democrat president fan. Jimmy Carter seems like a decent enough guy, but I'm not saying he was a great president. But you know, it was laid around his neck, but it was Nixon that took us off the gold standard in 71 that unleashed the floodgates of inflation.
Well,
right?
Ford wasn't any better.
Right, right.
You know, exactly. So yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, he is certainly, they're all to blame.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all to blame.
Exactly, right.
You know, they're all to blame. So, but yeah, no, I think Nixon's gold standard, taking us off the gold standard, but then Ford was just not a good president.
Yeah.
I mean, he was never meant to be a president.
Like, yeah.
He stumbled into it. That's right. And so, but no, you look at it now, I mean, if you increase the supply of the dollars we have by 20%, what do you expect is going to happen?
Right.
20% inflation.
Right.
I mean, that's how it works.
Yes.
You know, if there's more of a commodity, then it's going to be less. That's supply and demand. We've got more dollars out there floating around, so it's worth less now. And it just so happens that, I mean, from the very beginning, I was thinking, you know, 20%, we just printed 20% more dollars. Well, we'll probably have 20% inflation.
Yeah.
Well, we're on the track to that.
Right.
You know, we're 6.2, 1% in October. 1% inflation in October.
Which is an extrapolated 12%. That's the trend there. I think people get lost sometimes when they hear, you know, I think the print yesterday was like 0.86 or something like that. They were expecting a 0.62. They got a 0.86 or 0.89, whatever it was. But yeah, that means that, you know, you extrapolate. If that trend continues, you've got 12%. And that's officially recognized inflation. And that figure is massaged.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Fed's doing everything they can to try to control this. That's what's come out from what they couldn't control.
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
Think if they weren't doing anything to artificially, you know, control inflation right now, it would be out of control. I mean, it would be 20%. Look, you know, we keep spending money, keep spending, borrowing, printing. What do they think is going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, basic economic understanding. So the question there becomes, you know, what are they doing? What are the people in Washington, D.C. know this is going to happen? And essentially, it's almost like they've gotten away with it for so long. You know, they, you know, 2008, they did these bailouts. They looked around and went, well, you know, I mean, it's not too bad. So they just keep going. I mean, these things, it's like what they say. Everything's going fine until it isn't, and it can happen very quickly. They've known that this was going to come. And what's really aggravating to me now is that people are parsing this some kind of political terms that Joe Biden, Bidenflation, I know that's cute. It kind of fits. But that implies that you can vote your way out of this. If we just get rid of that Joe Biden, prices will go back to normal. No, never. As long as you have the Federal Reserve and Congress doing what they're doing, this is going to just get worse.
Yep, that's right. Well, look, and this one, inflation is basically just a tax on everybody. I mean, right. they're taking your wealth.
Yes.
Yeah, so what they do is they just printed 20%, right? 20% more dollars, and then they handed it out.
Right.
They gave it out to whoever they wanted to. They transferred that to who they wanted to have it. It's transfer of wealth. That's what they're doing. Where does that money come from? Well, now we've got, you know, we're on track to get 20% inflation. So if we have 20% inflation, that's where that money's coming from. So just in October, if you're sitting on cash, if your money is not in an investment, if it's just sitting in cash, you just lost 1% of your wealth.
Right, in a single month.
In a single month.
Yeah.
So year, if we're on track to do 12% this year, or even if it's 10%, that means if you're sitting on cash right now and you've been sitting on cash all year, you've lost 10% of your wealth. 10% of your wealth. And they took it by printing more dollars and handing that out to people. So they don't have to do a transfer
of
wealth.
For their own benefit.
Right.
For the benefit of Wall Street and of the elites who get first crack at this dollar. They invested in something that rises the tide of asset prices. They get first bite at the apple, and we are left with the consequences of that.
That's right. Oh, yeah. They all know what's going on.
Yeah.
They know not to hold cash.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, everybody, you know, everybody that has any kind of wealth, they don't have cash laying around anymore. Because of that very thing, you know, they know inflation's coming, stick it in an investment somewhere. But that's, I mean, you know, everybody's so concerned, and I'm concerned about taxes, right? I mean, taxes are going up too.
Yeah.
Because they've got to pay for it, you know, not only the inflation, but the debt. You know, the debt's continually increasing. They got to pay for that somehow too. So they're increasing our taxes. So not only are they taking it, you know, by taxes on the front end, they're also taking it on the back end through our wealth by inflation.
Well, what's going to happen too, and I'll go ahead and prognosticate it now, and it will happen. Everybody will ignore it now. They'll just complain about the inflation. They'll act like it's just Joe Biden who did this all by himself, like Dr. Evil. Eventually, the Fed loses control. Interest rates have to spike. It is going to crater the economy. People are going to lose money in their houses. I mean, this is just the opening act of what looks like a financial train wreck. And the one thing that I don't think people really understand is that the Federal Reserve, like when we had the big inflation of the 1970s, the tool that they used was Paul Volcker came in as Fed head and he started raising interest rates, which put us into a pretty sizable recession. We are so hooked. Every corporation, every consumer, all of the home builders, we have built such a debt monster in this country. Everybody addicted to these low interest rates. The Fed knows the second they start, and Trump knew it too, because as soon as they started increasing interest rates during Trump's term, he started crying like a little girl. Take them down. Don't do that. It's not fair. You didn't do it to Obama. So they took interest rates right back down again with the first little rumblings of economic problems. They don't have the tool they had to combat inflation in the 1970s.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Right now, I mean, home interest rates are like 3% or under 3%.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody, you know, it used to be like the Dave Ramsey's of the world used to say, hey, you know, pay off your house as soon as you can, make extra payments to it, pay that bad boy off because you're just losing money in interest. Well, now, you know, Dave Ramsey's still saying the same thing, but now most financial advisors are saying, don't pay that off.
Right.
You know, if you've got extra money, don't pay off a 3% mortgage rate. Ride that out for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's basically a negative real interest rate.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely, it is. It's a negative interest rate because you can take the same money. If you've got extra cash sitting around, instead of paying your house off, you put that in an investment.
Right.
And you're making 8% return on, you know, I mean, if you look at the history of the stock market, if you just put it in the stock market, you know, over a long period of time, you're going to make 8% off of it. You know, so now whether that's smart or not, you know, I don't know, because if the entire economy comes crashing down, the stock market's going to come crashing down too. But you know where you can put it?
Yeah, here it comes.
Yeah, there it is. decentralized currency, also known as crypto.
Yeah, well, we're going to see. You know, I on the stock market, here's the thing that I don't know at this point. I've been pretty much, I don't want to call myself a perma bear because I think that that is, it's just, I've seen the insanity of what we're doing, and I just didn't think it would last this long. I just didn't think our central bank could get away with what they've gotten away with without it really harming the dollar and some other problem. Is it possible now that, because we know economics or, conditions are deteriorating right now. We've got supply chain issues. We've got employment issues. We've got inflation, which means people are going to have to, you know, they're going to be spending more on fuel. They're going to be spending less on products because wages are not keeping up with this inflation. So we know we're headed into a thing. We know the stock market is wildly overvalued, led by companies like Tesla that's trading at 350 times earnings. Can they stop? I mean, you look at what happened at the beginning of 2020 when they started shutting the economy down. That correction should have been severe and prolonged through right now. We're still not recovered. It lasted 3 weeks before the Fed pumped that market right back up and took it to all-time highs. I am wondering, can they keep these? Are we going to avoid any stock market crashes until the dollar completely implodes?
Yeah, I don't know. The dollar will implode, though.
It will. Yes,
it will. I thought it was funny when the when they kept spending all this money, or the Fed kept pumping more money out into the economy. I saw one of those memes where it had the charts and the charts on it, and there was a huge spike. Like they had just saved the day. You know, we were getting back up, and then within a day, it had crashed back down. And they're like, "Well, that's all gone. Like, we just put." Yeah, just put another $3 trillion worth of currency out in circulation, and it's starting to help. No, okay, no.
Right.
No, it's gone.
And that's the thing, too, is that, and you know, I could talk about this for hours and hours, but I have to consider that people may not be interested in this. But, you know, what it used to take, you know, if the Fed were to print up $100 billion 30 years ago, it had some kind of effect on the economy, and that's just an arbitrary amount. You know, it might take $1 at one point. I can't remember the years. It might have been far back as the 50s. $1, injected into the economy, got $1 of return out, and it's just been going and going. Now they are just printing up trillions and trillions, and it's barely moving the needle on economic activity. It's just not creating what it did before. It's just like monetary heroin. When you get that first hit, it's huge. It lasts for forever. It really zonks you out. As you build up a tolerance for heroin, it takes more and more and more to get the same effect. You're always chasing that. And that's where we are right now.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We're addicts.
Yes.
Well, and look, I had actually two conversations. I had a breakfast meeting and a lunch meeting yesterday. And both guys I met with, I talked to them about our state. You know, we do, AFP does federal and state stuff, but we're primarily focused on state issues. And I was telling them, one of our biggest state issues is we are addicted to federal spending.
Right.
You know, we have a $6 billion state budget. We have a $16 billion inflow of federal cash. On a normal basis, this is pre-COVID numbers.
Right.
You know, this is, I mean, now we're getting, we're getting more than that now. You know, I can't remember how much. We've gotten $6 billion or something just for COVID in Mississippi. But, pre-COVID numbers, we were 2.5 times federal spending in Mississippi more than what the state was. And we're addicts.
Yeah.
And our, the first, the 12-step program, the first step is we got to admit it. Yep. We got to admit that we're addicted to that federal spending, and we will never be able to stand alone and reject what the feds are doing. I would be, I would love for us to be in a position to where Joe Biden comes down and says, nope, you got to do this, and say the courts support him and say, yep, you got to do anything he says. You got to follow his executive orders no matter how crazy he is because he's the new king. You got to do those things. What are we going
to
do?
Yeah, we have to go along.
If we're addicted to federal spending, what are we going to do?
Yeah, and nothing. I mean, there's no political solution to that until it's just absolute catastrophe. And, maybe there's a point where the Fed can't do it anymore, where it just becomes meaningless and everybody has to fend for themselves. It's a shame you got to get to that level. But, everybody just wants to play this game out as long as they possibly can.
Yeah. Look, an addict usually has hit rock bottom.
Right.
And so I don't know what that looks like for us.
Yeah.
I would hope that maybe we can come to our senses and understand the issues we're having in the state because of that before we have to hit rock bottom. But if we wait until the dollar crashes before we start doing something about it, it's going to be bad.
Well, I refer to the Federal Reserve here as the Death Star because I don't believe there's a single complaint that Republicans and conservatives have, and a lot of Democrats and liberals, too. You know, they talk about the rich and the wealth inequality and all this stuff. I'm like, where the hell do you think that money is coming from? You know, Elon Musk is not selling that many cars. Money is flowing to him in investment and speculating in his stock to make him the $200 billion man. It's not because he's built the best widget, notwithstanding Tesla has a decent product, I guess. Anyway, every complaint, the root cause of it is the Fed. You want to talk about people resisting the Green New Deal? You can't afford the Green New Deal without the Fed printing up money. You want to talk about socialism? We can't afford socialism in this country without the Fed printing up money. The endless wars can't happen. The welfare state can't happen. The pharmaceutical companies making massive profits, the government paying for all of these shots can't happen. The Fed is behind every single one of these things. Nobody talks about it. Rush Limbaugh didn't talk about it. Sean Hannity. I don't blame politicians for not talking about it because they're benefiting from this. They can pay off their donor class using Fed bucks. But why are conservative talk show hosts not talking about the root cause, the death star of this whole thing, to wake the American people up?
Yeah, I don't know. But politicians, all they, not all of them, but many of them, all they care about is bringing home the bacon.
Yeah, right.
They don't care where the money comes from.
Right.
All they want, they're looking for re-election, so they want to go back to their district and say, hey, look how much money I brought back to this, you know, district, county, or, you know, whatever it is, Senate district, House district. You know, they want to come back and say, look how much money I brought home. That's all they're concerned about.
I hope they're not looking any children in the eye when they're bragging about that stuff, because it's those kids that are going to end up suffering.
Yeah, well, hey, that's for them to worry about.
Yeah, that's right. They'll be out of office by then.
Yeah, that's it. That's,
yep. It's amazing. Well, we need an economics lesson. Maybe we just need to, I dedicate some shows to it. Anyway, we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity. Got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we're here with Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. Did you hear the beginning of the show today that the federal government, just talking about taxes and money and inflation and spending and all that stuff, the federal government set another record of tax haul they collected just in October, $283,927,000,000 in taxes. In the first month of the fiscal year, they spent $448 billion. You know, they overspent by, what did I figure, $160 billion, even though they're taking in record amounts of money.
More than we've ever taken in.
Ever.
But we're still outspending it.
Still able to outpace that. And I wanted to talk to you about this, see where Mississippi ranks. I know you're out there fighting the Mississippi state income tax. And are we thinking there's going to be a bill come through this next year?
Oh, there will be a bill. As a matter of fact, I've been meeting with folks last week, and I got another lunch meeting right after the show to go meet with some folks to talk about what we expect to see. And but I honestly, at this point, I'm not sure that we'll see much different than what we saw this year.
Yeah. So what is that? Just trying to maybe possibly
shift?
It's
a swap. Yeah, yeah. It's just a tax swap. They're swapping. The income tax for sales tax, which, you know, on a philosophical level, sales tax is a better tax than on your labor.
Yeah.
So philosophically, it's better, but, you know, it's how you do it. It's how they're going to do it. In this bill, you know, it uses an exemption instead of just a rate decrease, which is an odd way to do it. If you ask any, you know, conservative, you know, kind of tax policy person. I mean, there's tons of organizations out there, national organizations that talk about this. Literally all of them will say the best way to do it's a rate decrease. So basically we have 5% state income tax. You know, start chopping that down. Go from 5% to 4.5% to 4%, you know, start decreasing that rate until you can get it to nothing by either making cuts or economic growth, or if you have to do, you know, a tax swap, that's probably your last option that you want to do. But if you, you know, if you have to do that to get the last bit, you can do that and do it with a, you know, a better taxing option like a sales tax. But that's not what we're looking at doing. So I think that there will be some changes to the bill. I'm just not quite sure how many changes, and I'll find out in next week when I come back on the show. I'll have more to talk about that.
Politicians typically try to sell things as a way to keep more in your pocket, but they also seem to try to keep the same in their pocket. You know, like you're talking about, it's
right.
Swaps. You hear this very nefarious term that just sounds like a siren to me every time I hear it: revenue neutral.
Yeah.
And what that means is, oh, we're still going to take the same amount of money out of the economy for the government, but it's gonna, you're going to feel a little bit better about your paycheck. You just won't feel as good about your grocery bill. You know, that this revenue
That's
neutral
right.
thing. But do people, I don't know if you've ever seen polling on this or in talking to people, do people like have this desire, this idea that, well, we've got to keep funding the government at current levels? I mean, so you've got all of the people who really want to save tax money and they think the government could probably do with a little bit less.
Well, everybody wants their program.
Yeah.
Right. What the program that funds what they want to do, they want that. So everybody wants to say, hey, you know, there's hundreds of programs the state does, right? Agencies, different types of agencies that we have and programs and all kind of things that the state does that the taxpayer's paying for. And everybody wants to see that cut until you start talking about the thing that they're most passionate about.
Right.
So you certainly couldn't, you know, you can never talk about cutting school funding.
Right, yeah, education.
Or cutting road funding. You know, now some people you'd say, well, I mean, you know, what is Department of Environmental Quality? What are they actually even doing? You know, we have EPA. Why do we even need a state base? Let's cut them all together. Well, you know, that's fine. You know, they're only about $8 million a year, so it's a small agency.
That's always what they do. They corral you into some of these little, you know, it's one of the things conservatives do. They won't talk about the Federal Reserve, but they will talk about NPR. We need to quit funding.
Yeah.
And the taxpayer funding of public radio in this country is really pretty microscopic. It may be something like maybe $5 or $50 million. And actually, corporations pretty much own NPR. You'll see them sponsored by Pfizer.
Yeah.
So they nibble around the edges. And I think Republican politicians have been very good at showing outrage about the $300,000 study to study the transgender newt. You know, and they make a big deal about the fact money was wasted on that grant. But they leave apart the $1 trillion national security state, which they tell you, oh, we need to increase that with all the danger in the world, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, there's if you look at our state budget is about $6.5 billion in the state of Mississippi. If you look at our state budget, you know, the majority of our state dollars go to Medicaid, Medicare,
education,
know, schools, roads. Yeah. I mean, outside of that, there's very little left, and that's why you start looking at agencies like the, you know, Department of Environmental Quality. They're only $8 million. I mean, so you're talking about $6.5 billion,
right?
You know, that's $6,500 million, and DEQ's $8 million.
Yeah,
you know, our ESA program, that's education scholarship accounts. It's, you know, kind of a school freedom option that people can have to send their kids to other schools. If your public school's not offering what your child needs, you know, you can get in this program. Well, we only have 600 kids in the program because they keep, you know, dialing it down. They don't want to give it any more money, so they keep it low, so there's only 600 kids in it. But I mean, that program is, I think it's like $2.5 million a year is what we're spending in it.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, you get the you know, very pro public school people in Mississippi who absolutely hate anything that has, you know, any kind of
freedom,
you know, in it, like school freedom is. But you know, they want to talk bad about it and say, we can't do that. That's going to take away from public schools. But that's literally, like I said, it's $2 or $3 million in the program, and they're getting, you know, $1 billion.
Right, right. Well, you know, you say we've got a budget here in the state of Mississippi of $6.5 billion. Is that what you said?
Yeah, $6.5 billion.
Is that your car alarm going off?
I don't know if it's mine.
Well, you might want to take a look. You know, we're out here in Flora, Mississippi. It's a pretty bad neighborhood.
It's not mine. It's some Jeep. You know, if you drive a white Jeep and you're parked here in Flora, please turn off your
public service announcement. So our state budget is $6.5 billion, you said, or $6 billion.
Yeah.
But you said we take in $16 billion from the Fed. So what is that? That's money coming directly from the federal government in terms of Medicare, Medicaid, social benefits,
that's
those
right. kind,
that are going bypassing the state government.
Correct.
Going directly into our economy,
that's right.
theoretically.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah, those are dollars that our state legislature doesn't touch at all. They have no control or very little control over it.
They just
it.
End up in our borders.
Right, that's right.
To citizen, direct payments to citizens and
that's
things
right.
like that.
Yeah.
One other thing real quick then. What is your thought? I try to battle or fight a battle that is probably not real popular, but I run into a lot of people in conservative circles that talk about fair tax or flat taxes. And to me, that misses the larger point. That makes an assumption that at any level, but that's typically in the federal, the assumption from what I believe is the Stockholm Syndrome conservative is that, well, we got to send D.C. some of our money. Let's just do it in a more convenient way. To me, it's like instead of being mugged and rousted and possibly popped over the head with a gun, they just want to be able to just lay their wallet on the ground and walk away peacefully. You know what I mean? It's like a more peaceful mugging. But it assumes that Washington, D.C. should get a big chunk of our money. It's just a pain to fill out those big forms.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, you can talk about a fair tax. Is any tax really fair? This is just a more fair tax.
Right. Well, it's less of a hassle, really, is what it seems to me, because I guess tax rates in a fair tax thing. But the bottom line is, what if the federal government collects, last figures I saw were around $2.25 trillion from all kinds of sources, fees, fines, tariffs, corporate taxes, all those. If they get $2.5 trillion, which is what the federal government lived on in 2007, and everything ran fine, planes landed safely, bridges were held up. You know, if they collect that amount of money, make them live on that. And I think conservatives give up this battle and try to just make taxation a little bit easier for us. Don't have to fill out that April 15th thing. And I don't buy into that. I think that we should be hands off of our income.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. Look, on the tax swap, back to the bill that we're looking at, one of the plus sides of them taking it through sales tax and not through your income tax is we could almost completely do away with the state revenue service I don't know how many people they employ, but I would complete guesstimate. I bet you they have 100 employees.
Yeah.
You know, it's 100 people that are working down there to make sure you're paying your taxes through your income.
Yeah, I've met some of them sometimes rather aggressively.
So, we can put them out, but, you know, if we can cut something in government like that, say we, cut 100 jobs and, just making up some numbers, say that's $2 million, well, I guarantee you they're not going to cut our taxes by $2 million. They're going to find some other way to spend that money.
Right.
And that's the problem we have is nobody wants to make any cuts. You know, no politician wants to make any cuts because then they got to go back and answer their constituents and tell their constituents why they cut a program that they believe in. You know, so they just keep spending more and more money.
So you were talking about the people not wanting their programs cut. Do you believe my clarion call? You don't believe I'm really at the cusp of a movement to abolish the IRS and the Federal Reserve, you know, coming from this little Florida studio that just don't really feel like I've got the public sentiment with me?
I think the dollar will crash before
I think you're right
before
about
we abolish the IRS and the Fed.
So. It won't be me. They will destroy themselves ultimately.
Yeah,
so
that's
I guess
right.
It will by any means necessary. So I'm okay with that too. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back with Stephen Utroska, Americans.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, talking to Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. What I was going to get to a second ago, Mississippi's top marginal tax rate stacked nationally. We're kind of in the middle of the pack with the top tax rate being 56.2%. Every single state in the country, the combined federal, state, and local taxes, and I assume they get maybe an average local tax or something like that. It's all over 50%. And that was pretty stunning to me to know there's no states under that. And this is obviously for upper income people, but still, that is an extraction of a lot of wealth. I mean, New York, at least we're not New York. That's about all we can say at this point. New York, 66.2%.
Oof.
I mean, you're keeping 33.8% of the dollars that you earn by the time it's all said and done. Just unbelievable. But even in Mississippi, I mean, you're talking about you get to keep 43% of what you earn during the course of a year if you're at the top marginal tax brackets. And, you know, I mean, you look around Mississippi and think, where the hell is my money going? What am I paying for?
Yeah, well, Obama, I think, would say that you didn't do that. You didn't build that. That's not your money. That's our money. We're just allowing you to keep 43% of it.
I wish they would just come out and say that. That would anger people. I find conservatives so docile on taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are just, I don't know who came up with, who coined the phrase, the only things in life unavoidable are death and taxes. That had to have been a statist.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to lump it in there where there's nothing you can do. Look away. This is not the hill you want to die on. I think it should be. I don't think there's anything, It doesn't impress me people who say for my cold, dead hands on the Second Amendment, but they give up a third of their income every year to the government.
Yeah, well, I can't remember who it was. Milton Friedman, maybe, or Thomas Sowell, one of the great economists. They said, you know, there's nothing, no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
You know, that's more true.
Right.
You know, and everybody wants something free, and somebody is paying for that. And if you look at this tax rate, it looks like we're paying for it. Those of us who are paying taxes, at least.
Right. I mean, these are huge numbers. And it would be, if you had to write a check, you know, even average Americans, these are upper income people, but if average Americans and middle class people had to write a check, if you went to the grocery store and they said, you know, your groceries are $128, and then we're going to charge you, you know, $13.90 for sales tax, two separate transactions. If every tax was done as a different transaction that you had to proactively pay, people love to complain about car tags. They see that. If the gas pump charged you twice, they charged you for the fuel that you bought from the fuel company selling it to you, and then there's a separate transaction for the fuel taxes that you paid on that, I think people would just be stunned to look at their bank statement and go, oh, my gosh, look what I'm paying in taxes every month.
Well, that's, you know, there's, I can't remember what organization started it, but they started what they call Tax Freedom Day.
Yeah.
And that's the day if you paid all of your taxes up front, you know, you didn't get to keep a single dime of it. You know, your paycheck went all to the government until you paid your tax burden, which you're saying Mississippi's 56%. So that means our tax freedom day would be sometime like in July.
Yeah.
So that means not a dime of your income that you've earned through January through July would you actually take home until you get to your tax freedom day, which is 56%.
Yeah.
You pay that. Now, after that, you know, from mid-July to on, you can keep the rest of it.
Right.
You know, so for the second half of the year.
Work for yourself.
Yeah,
then.
Oh, yeah, work for yourself. Keep your money. That's your money. We've already taken ours. So
right.
If they took it off. Again, if they did that, if they took the top half, you know, first, people would riot.
Yeah.
You know, people would riot over it. But if you just take a little bit at a time, you know, you don't really notice it that much. You take a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, people don't notice. One of the things we were talking about off air is another report I saw is ALEC. It's the American Legislative Exchange Conference. It's basically all the state legislatures, all the Republicans or conservatives get together, and they share all these great policy ideas. And the organization actually is a good organization. They believe in free markets. You know, now their constituencies, you know, their members aren't necessarily that great. But they put out a report. And so backstory, Mississippi became, you know, supermajority Republican in 2011, 10 years ago. 10 years ago. Is basically when we took over, the Republicans took over supermajorities in the House and Senate, and so 2011, so 10 years now, we've had 10 years of Republican control in Mississippi. ALEC's report, they do an economic freedom report, which basically says, you know, what states are the best states economically for businesses to go to, and Mississippi was 19 in 2011. Where do you think we are today? 10 years later, Republicans have owned it for 10 years. We were number 19, one being the best.
Three or four?
Oh, man, we should be way up there, right?
Yeah.
We've dropped eight spots. We're 27 now.
That's unbelievable.
As of this year, the report came out, we were 27. 10 years of control, we've dropped 8 points.
Yeah. And this is why I don't play the two-party game or put any stock in, you know, what letter is behind somebody's name. That is, the lack of creativity in Mississippi is stunning to me.
I mean, you know, look, we've lost people in the last 10 years. People are leaving the state. You know, that's, everybody knows that.
And this is in a time where a lot of people are leaving the most populous states. They're going somewhere. You would think we would be net gainers of population as people by the tens of millions leave New York and California and Illinois. They are leaving those places.
But they want to go somewhere where there's a business environment that's open and free that they can set up their businesses.
Right.
And so you have to have a free market. And that's our problem is for the last 10 years, you know, we harp on free markets. We love limited government, lower taxes, free markets. I mean, those are the conservative talking points. And then when it comes to actually passing good legislation, what have we done? We still have complete protectionism. We have more license, you know, professional licenses now than we've ever had before. I mean, we just completely stifle the market through protectionist policies, instead of opening it up to a free market and let businesses come and thrive, do their own thing.
I mean, is that really fair? I mean, I think really think if you give the Republicans 10 more years, then they'll really, it'll happen then. You know, you can't turn this ship around in just 10 years. You can't expect much. Apparently, everybody who's moving out of every other state is moving to either Texas or Tennessee. I mean, because it's Austin and Nashville from the people I've talked to in those areas that say they're being overrun by new people. And doesn't Tennessee have no state income tax?
Well, that's like the Republicans are blaming Joe Biden for everything now. The Democrats are still blaming Trump for his errors. You know, so we'll just keep blaming each other. So the Republicans, we're still blaming the Democrats who had control for, I don't know, 50 years before that. I don't know how long. You know, the Democrats controlled Mississippi for forever. So, I mean, 10 years is nothing compared to, you know, the time the Democrats had.
They did so much damage.
So much damage. Yeah. You know, we're still feeling the effects from that. We're right in the ship, though. Like you said, another 10 years, we should have this thing turn around.
Yeah. Oh, so sick. And these people can go out and campaign. All right, got to take one more break. We'll come back and figure out what all Americans' prosperity is about, what you're up to anyway, and we'll talk about the event tonight and some of the things you've got coming up, particularly your Capitol Day at the beginning of next year.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead and get ahead
January
of that.
27th.
Yeah, not that an army should show up. I mean, talking just what we just talked about, an army should show up at the Capitol.
We hope so.
Yeah, all right, we'll be right back. From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment with Stephen Utroska from Americans for Prosperity. I wanted to ask you about this real quick. I know that Americans for Prosperity was in D.C. really going against this infrastructure bill. And I don't know the final form of what they got passed, at least through the House already. This idea of taxes on unrealized capital gains, what a disaster would that be?
Yep.
I mean, so that's just basically a giant wealth tax. And then what's the disaster of... You know, taxing people on crypto gains one year and then having to give them the loss the next year. I mean, an accounting nightmare, a wealth confiscation nightmare, an investment killer in this country.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen lots of memes about unrealized donations, too. So I'm going to start making claims of unrealized donations to counteract that.
Well, just do what the wealthy people do. They come out and they talk about how they're going to give, you know, Warren Buffett, you know, is going to give away half his fortune someday down the future, set up a nonprofit, take the tax advantage now, and we promise that money's going to find its way to good uses. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know what the final bill looks like, but it passed. That was it's the same bill that Roger Wicker voted for in the Senate. It has now passed the House.
But they don't think this is going to get through the Senate, do they?
Well, I don't. I think there's a couple of minor changes to it, but yeah, I think it will.
Oh,
I think
really?
Yeah.
What was the final tab on this one? Is this a 1.75?
I think it was 1.2.
1.2.
Yeah, 1.2 trillion.
We're making money. That's on sale.
Cut. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So when you go to some of the discount stores, you know, it says you save this amount of money by buying this.
The more you buy, the more you save.
That's it.
That's fantastic. It. Well, I was just with that unrealized capital gains. That's just so nefarious.
And the $600 bank transaction. You know, they want any transaction over $600. They want the bank to.
My understanding is they abandoned that and they've moved the threshold up to $10,000.
Well, it's already been $10,000. Well, it's always been $10,000.
That's a different. My understanding, the $10,000, if you did anything in your account unusual, $10,000 or over, generated an automatic SAR, a suspicious activity report. What this thing is essentially if you run $10,000 through an account during the course of an entire year.
Oh.
How many Americans run $10,000? Anybody who works, part-time employees run $10,000 through an account during the course of a year. So it's
everybody.
It's basically everybody. So what I say all the time is that they take 10 steps forward and then they retreat one step and everybody considers it a victory. There's a lot of people out there going, well, we knocked them off that $600 threshold.
Yeah.
But they're still nine steps ahead if they get this $10,000 threshold. It's still nosing around in our accounts anyway.
Yep.
Only got a couple minutes. Let's talk about what you guys got coming up.
Yeah, so we've got – so we just ended. Last week was our last – Grassroots Leadership Academy. We had 27 grads come out of it. I think we ended up having about 35 or so actually come out, but you had to attend
some
four.
Dropouts.
Yeah, had some dropouts there, so we ended up having 27 that, we had, it was a six-class series. We had 27 people. that went through all those. So, I mean, fantastic activists getting involved, wanting to do something, and now they have at least a little bit of a background of how to get involved.
I was so wrong. I'm always ready to admit when I was wrong. But I told you when you started, I was like, you're going to really do this for 6 weeks for just an hour? So that's really tedious for a lot of people. That was fantastic, because if you'd just been there for 1 or 2 days for longer, you wouldn't have gotten to know the people. And it was important to make those connections.
Yeah, well,
too,
now you're building coalitions now with those people. So, but we look to do a couple more of those next year. So I'll certainly let the listeners know when we're planning on doing those again. But we've got our big event tonight up in DeSoto County, Nesbitt. Again, you can go on our Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi, all spelled out. See the event there for tonight. We've got a few seats still available. Getting very limited, though. I hadn't looked at the numbers today, but last night we had about 20 seats left. So,
What is the event? What are you doing there?
Oh, so it's a Veterans Day event. We're just celebrating veterans, but then we're also partnering with the House Freedom Caucus, which is made up by three of the guys from DeSoto County who are our policy champions, get A on our scorecard.
I can't wait to get up there and start drinking the water in DeSoto County.
Liberty's pushing up. Yeah. So, those guys, we partnered with them to do this event. They'll get up. Brady Williamson from Oxford is part of House Freedom Caucus. He's a veteran. He's going to get up and talk. So just a good time. So we'll be doing that tonight. And then, of course, we have our big Capitol Day event coming up January 27th. January 27th at 10 a.m. We'll all meet on the Capitol steps. They'll be in session. We'll have some people come talk. We'll have a short little program, and then basically we'll walk into the Capitol as they're getting out of committee meetings. So about that time, 11 o'clock, they'll be getting out of committee meetings. We'll walk in, talk to them, hold them accountable. That's what we're there for.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that should be a good – what day of the week is that?
That's a Thursday. So the reason we're doing it on Thursday, because they're in session during the week. The following Tuesday is committee deadline. That's the first deadline for bills. So if there's bills we're trying to push, we've got to get them past that. If there's bills we want to kill, that's our first opportunity to do it is in committee. So,
all right. Well, we'll keep talking about that for the rest of the year, try to get a good turnout. Anyway, we're talking to Stephen Utroska, Americans for Prosperity, all out of time. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.